Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio by Dominic Power. Episode 3.
Catherine awoke to objects of cheerfulness at 7 o'clock the next day. Her fire was already burning, and a bright morning had succeeded the tempest of the night. With the return of consciousness, she remembered the mysterious manuscript from the night before. Springing from her bed, she gathered the scattered sheets from the floor.
2 shirts, 4 pair stockings, 3 cravats. To Poultice Chestnut Mare, 1 guinea.
An inventory of linen and a farrier's bill. This was the collection of papers which had filled her with expectation and alarm, and robbed her of half a night's rest. How could she have so imposed upon herself? Heaven forbid that Henry Tilney should ever know of her folly. Finding nobody about, she slipped out of the front of the house and walked some distance in order to see Northanger Abbey entire. Catherine was struck beyond her expectation by the grandeur of the abbey as she saw it for the first time from the lawn.
Miss Morland!
Mr. Tilney, good morning.
Good morning. A restful night at Northanger, I trust?
Yes, very.
The storm did not disturb you at all?
Why do you ask?
Well, the first night in a strange house can be unsettling.
It is a charming morning now. Storms and sleeplessness are nothing when they are over.
Very true. You are admiring the building.
I did not see it properly when we arrived yesterday.
And is it everything you expected?
Yes.
Oh, you are not quite sure.
I am. At least I am now. Viewed from here, it seems ancient. Just like the abbeys one has read about.
But inside it is perhaps insufficiently gloomy?
Yes, that's right. it's very nice.
I see the problem. An abbey, by its very name, suggests brooding antiquity. Unfortunately, my father has a passion for comfort and modernity that you must surely censure.
Oh, no. I am sure your father is right. It is just so very different from what I expected.
You will find in time that Northanger has its fair share of secrets.
I cannot tell if you are teasing me.
Morning, Catherine. Henry.
Eleanor.
It's nearly 8 o'clock and our father is waiting.
One thing you can rely on in Northanger Abbey is the unvarying punctuality of our meal times.
Over here. Some bread for Miss Morland.
Sir.
Now, this bread is baked in the French style. I believe you'll find it lighter than your English loaf.
Thank you.
Yes.
What would you like to do today, Catherine? There are some very pretty walks. Or perhaps you prefer to explore the abbey.
The abbey, please.
Miss Morland. Your opinion here, if you please, in the manner of our china. I chose it myself, but we old soldiers may not be the best judges of what'll be pleasing to the eye of a fashionable young lady.
It is very elegant.
Elegant. That's your verdict. Your opinion gives me great encouragement. I would imagine you learned the value of good china at Fullerton.
No, indeed. I never saw anything half so fine at home.
My principle, I will confess, is neatness and simplicity. It is right, I believe, to encourage the manufacture in our own country. Now, to my uncritical palate, that tea is as well flavoured for being drunk from the clay of Staffordshire as that of Dresden or Sèvres. Would you not say so? Of course, manufacture has improved over the last couple of years. When I was last in town, I saw some much superior specimens, and who can say? It may not be too long before a happy event may give me the pleasure of selecting a set for someone other than myself. Henry, you should not delay your journey to Woodston.
I did not know you were leaving.
I go for 2 days only. Parish business requires my presence.
You've not informed our guest. That's very bad. I cannot abide such a casual attitude.
I would not wish to keep Mr. Tilney from his parish.
That does you credit. I should explain about my son's parish. The property is chiefly my own, and I take care that it not be a bad one. Did Henry's income depend solely on this living, he would not be ill provided for. Would it interest you to see it?
Oh, yes, I would like that very much.
Take note of that, Henry. You may think it odd that I should insist on a profession for my son. There are times, such as this, when we could all wish him free from every tie of business. The money is nothing. Employment is the thing. You take Frederick, my eldest son. He will perhaps inherit as considerable a landed property as any private man in the country. Yet he's serving his country with distinction as a soldier. And that is how it should be.
Indeed, Father.
So, sadly, I must take my leave of you, Miss Morland, and return to my parish duties.
Could you not go tomorrow?
If I go today, I shall be
if
back
he's
sooner.
To go, he's to go. There's no point in delaying. It looks uncommonly like indecision. Don't fuss over him, Eleanor. It's all decided.
Goodbye, Miss Morland.
Goodbye, Mr. Pitney.
Yeah. Now, Miss Morland, how can we divert you?
I should very much like to see the Abbey.
Excellent choice. Excellent. I promised myself the pleasure of showing you the improvements I've made, but sadly, I have no leisure to do so at present.
Perhaps I could show Miss Morland around.
No, that would not do. It's better that she see the Abbey when I can conduct her myself. Now, I think I detect in Miss Morland's eyes a judicious desire to view the gardens before the rains return.
There is no need, I assure
you. No, it's no trouble. Eleanor will attend to it.
I believe it will be wisest to do that before the weather breaks.
That's settled, then. You must show Miss Morland the new greenhouses and the improvements to the kitchen garden.
Yes, Father.
She'll wish to compare them with those of Mr. Allen. See to it, Eleanor.
Yes, Father.
Catherine did not exactly know how this was to be understood. General Tilney's change of plan. Why was there such unwillingness on the General's side to allow her the freedom to explore the Abbey without his supervision? She was all impatience to see the house and had scarcely any curiosity about the gardens.
Is it inconvenient for your father to show me around?
Do not be uneasy on my father's account. He's very fixed in his habits and he prefers to show visitors around himself. You are obliging him by falling in with his wishes.
He sometimes speaks quite harshly to you.
A little, perhaps. He likes everything to be just so. He seems very pleased that you're here. I'm sure he's glad that I have a companion. There's the kitchen garden. Shall we go and see it?
Well, we could do. But to say the truth, I have never really cared for a kitchen garden.
No more do I. And over here are the greenhouses. Perhaps you'd be interested in a favourite walk of mine, though I'm afraid it may be a bit damp after the night's rain.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
Eleanor led them towards a narrow winding path through a thick grove of old Scotch firs. And Catherine, struck by its gloomy aspect, was eager to enter it.
General Tilney does not care for this walk, perhaps.
No, he avoids it.
I like this. It is more picturesque and old than anything we have seen this morning.
My mother used to love it. I came here with her as a child. Be careful of those brambles.
Oh,
are you all right?
Oh, I'm caught.
Well, let me help. There. Better?
Much better. Oh, I like this walk better than all the rest of the gardens. I wonder that your father did not do something about it.
I am afraid that Father is set against it. He has given the gardeners instructions that it is not to be touched.
Catherine's interest in the deceased Mrs. Tilney grew with each new revelation. Of her unhappiness in marriage, she felt persuaded. The General had certainly been an unkind husband. He did not love her walk. Could he therefore have loved her?
You must miss her very much.
I believe she would have been a good influence on all of us.
On your father?
Yes, on father too. Perhaps I should explain my father's displeasure. You may have already heard something of the matter.
No, indeed.
Do you know the Lockwood family?
No.
Their son, Frank, became very attached to me while we were in Bath. My father was very much against him.
Did you care for him?
Yes. But Father felt the match was unsuitable. It is the reason we left Bath early.
I remember Isabella did say something about it before we left, but I did not credit it at the time.
I believe there was common talk for a while. It made me very uncomfortable.
Your father seems very harsh.
Do not think so. He believes he is acting for the best in the absence of my mother. But I believe she would have understood.
Was she a very charming woman?
Yes, very.
Is there a picture of her?
There is only one. It was meant for the drawing room, but my father was dissatisfied with it. I keep it in my bedroom now.
Eleanor!
Oh, we must go back. Father is ready for us.
Good Lord, Eleanor, where have you been? In a jungle?
We looked at the gardens.
Which part of the gardens, exactly? Eleanor, how do you account for your appearance? Was there a mutiny of the estate workers?
I showed her the old fir grove.
Why did you do such a thing? This has been a wasted morning for our guests.
I'm sorry, Father.
Well, come along, come along. May as well begin our tour of the house. Not leisure for any further delays. My apologies, Miss Morland. This is your fault, Eleanor.
As General Tilney led the way across the hall, through the common drawing room and one useless antechamber after another, Catherine could no longer hide from herself the nature of her feelings.
Now, Miss Morland, observe, if you will, the workmanship of the hangings over that window. I had them made last year.
What had been terror and dislike before was now absolute aversion. Yes, aversion. His cruelty to Eleanor and his late wife made him odious to her. She had often read of such tyrants.
Lord Drumgool commandeered these apartments when he last visited. And perhaps they'd suit friends from Fullerton, should they favour us with a visit.
The costliness or elegance of any room's fitting up could be nothing to her. She cared for no furniture of a more modern date than the 15th century.
Catherine, come this way a moment.
Eleanor, where do you suppose you're going now?
I just thought...
You just thought? Hey, we've been exhausting Miss Morland and you seek to prolong it. Do you not think your friend might like some refreshment at this point? It's nearly 11 o'clock.
Where were we going?
I was going to take you into what was my mother's room. The room in which she died.
After we've refreshed ourselves, we shall look at the new offices. You'll find much of interest in their refurbishment.
The day's tour of Northanger Abbey was succeeded by an evening, the little variety and length of which made Catherine peculiarly sensible of Henry's importance among them. As Catherine and Eleanor sat together, General Tilney restlessly paced the room.
Your father seems very agitated tonight.
Oh, he often walks about the room in this way. It's nothing unusual.
It remains as it was, I suppose.
What does?
Your mother's room.
Oh, yes, my father has not refurbished it.
And how long ago did you say since your mother died?
She has been dead these 9 years.
9 years, Catherine knew, was a trifle of time, compared with what generally elapsed after the death of an injured wife, before her room was put to rights.
You were with her, I suppose, to the last?
No. I was unfortunately from home. Her illness was sudden and short, and before I arrived it was all over.
Catherine's blood ran cold with the horrid suggestions which naturally sprang from these words. Could it be possible? Could Henry's father... Watching him slowly pacing the length of the room with downcast eyes, her suspicions were reinforced.
I should so like to see your mother's picture.
Oh, I shall show it to you tomorrow.
And her bedroom?
That too.
What pretty mischief are you two planning together?
Nothing, Father.
Well, I can never believe that when two young ladies are in close conference. Eleanor, be mindful Miss Morland might wish to retire.
Yes, Father.
Sadly, I have many pressing duties before I can close my eyes. And, I may be poring over the affairs of the nation for hours after you're asleep.
His constant agitated pacing plainly spoke the gloomy workings of a mind not, in its fearful review of past scenes of guilt, wholly dead to humanity. The following afternoon, while General Tilney was out of the way, Eleanor made good her promise, taking Catherine to her room to show her the portrait of the late Mrs. Tilney.
She's lovely.
It was painted in the year before she died.
But why does your father not hang it in the main house?
You need not whisper.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just...
My father found fault with the workmanship. He did not think the representation good enough.
Do you think so?
No. No, I think it captures her very well. She's just as I remembered her. I often fancy she's still with us.
Do you? How interesting.
Would you like to see her room now?
Very much. Will not your father mind?
Why should he?
Well, he seemed reluctant that we should go there yesterday.
I'm sure there can be no harm in you seeing it.
Catherine's excitement as they entered the great gallery was too much for any endeavour at discourse. She could only look at her companion.
Oh, calm yourself.
Who is it?
It may be my father.
Well, I thought he was busy.
Helena! Helena!
Yes, father? Excuse me, Catherine.
Catherine saw her friend disappear with her father. She did not wait, but ran for safety to her own room. She stayed there an hour, in the greatest agitation, deeply commiserating the state of her poor friend. She began to imagine scenes of horror that Eleanor must be enduring at the remorseless and tyrannical hands of a father who had hitherto shown himself dead to feeling. The sound of a horse coming towards the abbey allowed her the hope that deliverance would come in the shape of Henry Tilney.
Catherine?
Eleanor! Oh, Eleanor, are you all right?
Yes, I'm quite all right. Only Father is anxious that we should not be late starting dinner. I am sent to fetch you.
I heard a horse. I wondered if perhaps your brother had returned from his parish.
Oh, no, that was my father's steward. I don't like to hurry you, Catherine.
I will be down as quickly as I can.
Eleanor!
Is your father very displeased?
Eleanor!
Dear Catherine, I may not talk now. Please do not delay coming down. Father's temper is uncertain today.
The drawing room gave every appearance of normality. General Tilney greeted her in his customary complimentary style, which so well concealed his resentful ire as to make her feel secure of her life for the present.
An old soldier such as I now understands how it was you captured Bath without benefit of artillery. Some more wine.
No, thank you.
I fear life at Northanger has proved fatiguing for you. Mm. Eleanor tells me you've remained in your room throughout the afternoon.
I'm sure Miss Morland has her reasons.
My daughter's been out of spirits lately. Perhaps doth not provide the lively companionship that might make your stay here enjoyable.
No, indeed. I am very happy in Eleanor's company.
Your benevolence to your friend does you credit, as always. Now, shall we go through to dinner?
Throughout that night, Catherine thought of Mrs. Tilney's room and the General's apparent dread of it. Could it contain some proofs of the General's cruelty? Perhaps some fragments of the journal, continued by Mrs. Tilney to the last gasp? By the morning, she had determined that she must try for the room again, and that this time Eleanor should know nothing of the matter. To involve her in a second detection could not be the office of a friend. At 4 o'clock, an opportunity presented itself. It meant her retiring to dress half an hour earlier than usual and using the time to make her way to the forbidden gallery.
Oh!
She beheld what fixed her to the spot and agitated every feature.
Oh, how stupid! Stupid!
Astonishment and doubt first seized her, and a shortly succeeding ray of common sense added bitter emotions of shame. The apartment, to which she had given a date so ancient, a position so awful, proved to be a bright, well-proportioned, modern apartment. She could not be mistaken in the room, but how grossly mistaken in everything else!
Oh, you...
Miss Morland, are you all right?
What are you doing here?
I am back a day early, that is all.
In this part of the abbey?
It is the nearest way from the stable yard to my room. This room does not usually feature in my father's grand tour of the abbey.
No.
Yet you wanted to visit it.
I wanted to see your mother's room.
Ah. Is there anything extraordinary to be seen here? You look pale. I'm afraid I alarmed you, coming upon you without warning. Perhaps you did not know this part of the house was in common use.
No, I did not. You have had a fine day for your ride, I hope.
Very, thank you. I'm surprised Eleanor has not brought you here before.
Oh, she was going to, but only your father discovered us.
And that prevented you?
Well, I thought he seemed displeased.
He does not care for this part of the abbey. Have you looked into all the rooms in this passage?
No. I must go and dress for dinner.
It is only 4:15. We are not in Bath now. I imagine Eleanor has talked to you about our mother a great deal.
That is, no, not much. But what she did say was very interesting.
Interesting? In what way?
Her dying so suddenly, and you, none of you, being at home. And your father, I thought perhaps he had not been very fond of her.
And from this you suspect some negligence on his part? Or perhaps something worse?
I don't know what I think.
My mother's death was sudden, but her illness was one from which she had often suffered. Her physician, a very respectable man, was in constant attendance. Frederick and I were both at home and saw her receive every possible attention. Eleanor was away from home. If she had been here, I believe it would have been easier for her in later years.
But your father, was he afflicted?
For a time. Greatly so. He loved her. I will not pretend that while she lived, he was always kind and considerate. But if his temper injured her, his judgment never did.
Oh, I am very glad of it. It would have been very shocking
if I understand you rightly, you had formed such a surmise of horrors. Miss Morland, Catherine, you must put this out of your mind. Remember the country and the age in which we live. Is this likely? Could such atrocities be perpetrated without being known in a society where every man is surrounded by a neighbourhood of voluntary spies, eager to inform, where roads and newspapers lay everything open?
I'm sorry.
What were you thinking of?
I must go.
Catherine! Wait!
The visions of romance were over. Henry's address, short as it had been, had thoroughly opened her eyes to the extravagance of her late fancies. Her folly, which now seemed even criminal, was all exposed to him, and he must despise her forever.
Catherine?
Yes?
We have been worried about you. Won't you come down?
I'm sorry.
Well, Henry said you were out of sorts when he saw you earlier. Do you not think it would be better if you came down to supper?
Yes. I will be down in a minute.
The absurdity and curiosity of her fears, could they ever be forgotten? He had, she thought, once or twice before today, shown something like affection for her. But now...
Come soon. You know how Father frets about punctuality at mealtimes.
In short, she made herself as miserable as possible before going down to supper, where, as if to mock her suspicions, General Tilney greeted her with a fusillade of compliments. After dinner, alone with Henry and Catherine, she struggled to conceal her shame.
Catherine, you hardly ate at all at supper. We are worried that you are pining for home.
It is not that, truly.
Be that as it may, Eleanor and I have snatched a moment before supper to plan a regime of recuperation.
It is very kind of you, I'm sure.
You are entitled to more enjoyment than Northanger Abbey has so far afforded you. We have elected to be your physicians, and we prescribe a holiday from official tours of the Abbey and all its improvements. That would be a start. You see, Eleanor, it is working already.
Ah, well, you have not asked what Catherine would like to do.
Well, Catherine, how do you decide?
I think I should like it very much.
There. We all agreed. We will spend the evening thinking of ways to enjoy ourselves.
That night, Catherine was able to acknowledge that her spirits were at least raised to a modest tranquillity. She could not forget or defend what had passed. It seemed as if the whole might be traced to the influence of that sort of reading she indulged in Bath. Her mind made up on these several points, and her resolution formed of always judging and acting in future with the greatest good sense, she had nothing left to do but to forgive herself and be happy once again.
Catherine, you have a visitor.
A visitor? Who?
It is your brother.
James? Where is he?
He would not come in. He's waiting by the front door. I believe he has something important to tell you.
Call on us if there's anything we can do.
Hello, Catherine.
James, what is it? You look dreadful.
Do I? Well, it is no matter.
Nothing is wrong with our mother or father.
Not that I know of.
Tell me what is wrong. You are frightening me.
I wish you'd never set eyes on this cursed family.
The Tilneys? What can you mean?
I have come here to tell you that it is all over.
Oh, what is over?
Everything. Everything is at an end between Miss Thorpe and me. I left her in Bath yesterday.
How did this happen?
I cannot go into particulars. Why should I cause you pain? I was foolish enough to believe my affection was returned. Well, that is over. I am undeceived and there is an end of it.
James, what has caused this?
You will know soon enough from another quarter. Indeed, I wish your visit here will be over soon. Certainly before Captain Tilney makes his engagement known, or you will be uncomfortably circumstanced.
Isabella and Captain Tilney?
Her duplicity hurts me more than all. Right to the very end, she told me she was as much attached to me as ever.
Have you told our parents?
No.
Well, they must be told.
I know they must, but I cannot face them. After Father's consent was so kindly given, how can I see them again? Kitty, you are the only friend I have left.
But what will you do?
I cannot go back to Oxford. I shall go to London. At least it has no associations with Isabella. There I may lose myself.
You will not do any such thing. If you leave Oxford, you will disappoint our parents as much as Isabella has disappointed you. Please, let us go indoors, James. You must stay the night.
No, I'm not ready to face Captain Tilney's family yet. For the rest, I will be guided by you. You are a rock, Kitty. Your love I do build upon.
Is your brother staying?
No. He is not able to.
No bad news from Fullerton, I hope. Your mother and father and the rest of your family, I hope they are none of them ill.
No, I thank you. They are all very well.
Oh, that is good news, at least.
Yes, it is.
But your brother's visit has upset you.
It has upset me more than I can say. Poor James is so unhappy. You will soon know why.
Dear Catherine, you must tell us what is the matter.
But I cannot. But I must ask you, if your brother should be coming here, you will give me notice of it, so that I may go away.
You wish to leave if Frederick comes here?
Yes. I am sure I would be very sorry to leave you so soon. Something dreadful has happened, and I cannot be in the same house with Captain Tilney.
Would this have anything to do with your friend, Miss Thorpe?
I did not think you would have guessed it so soon. Mm. When we talked of it in Bath, you did not think it would end so. It is very shocking.
How has it ended exactly?
Isabella has deserted my brother to marry yours.
Oh, Catherine, that cannot be.
I am very sorry to hear that anyone you love should be unhappy, but I do not think a betrothal between my brother and your friend is likely.
You should have seen James. It must be true.
I don't say that you are deceived, or that your brother is, but Miss Thorpe may very well be.
Henry, is it possible?
Are her family wealthy?
Not very. But that will not matter to your father.
Why is that?
I have often heard him say that he only valued money because it allowed him to provide for his children's happiness.
Ah.
Would it be to promote his happiness to allow him to marry such a girl? She must be unprincipled to use your brother so.
Oh, cheer up, Catherine. It may be that your brother has had a lucky escape. You may have to accept a new sister-in-law, Eleanor. Open, candid, artless, guileless, with affection strong but simple, forming no pretensions and knowing no disguise.
I would welcome such a sister-in-law.
And in the meantime, you must contend with Miss Thorpe.
Henry.
I think that we have neglected a promise to Miss Morland.
What is that, sir?
To show her your parsonage at Woodston.
Should you like to see it?
Oh, yes, very much.
Well, we shall call on you.
That is a delightful idea.
Well, when may I look forward to this pleasure?
Oh, we're entirely at your disposal, are we not, Miss Morland? When would suit?
I must be
Well, we'll take our chance then, Henry. No need to fix. I may not do Monday, as I expect my surveyor that day. Tuesday, I must attend the club. It's expected on me, Miss Morland. Thursday, I'm in London. Would Wednesday be agreeable?
Oh, any day will suit me.
Wednesday it is, then. You're not to put yourself out, Henry. Whatever you happen to have in the house will be enough.
Oh, that's very good of you, sir.
Well, 2¾ hours will carry us to Woodston, I suppose. We shall be in the carriage by 10, Eleanor. No later, mind. At 1:15 on Wednesday, you may look for us.
I shall be delighted, sir.
Now I must leave you. The estate has its responsibilities. Miss Morland, enjoy your day.
I must bid you farewell.
Where are you going?
To frighten my housekeeper out of her wits. No time must be lost in getting the place ready.
But how can you think such a thing after what the General said? When he so particularly desired you not to give yourself any trouble. I mean, he made such a point of it.
Nevertheless, it would be wise for me to go.
Eleanor, you must persuade him.
No, perhaps Henry is right. We must find ways to amuse ourselves in his absence.
I will have to make some sacrifices, Miss Morland, before Wednesday's expedition is achieved.
Wednesday seems such a long way away.
Now, we're not comparing it with Fullerton and Northanger. I mean, we're considering it as a mere parsonage. Small and confined, we allow, but decent, perhaps, and habitable. But you may judge for yourself. We are almost there.
This is a charming village, is it not, Eleanor?
You find it charming. Perhaps it is. Not as picturesque as Fullerton, perhaps, but, well, certainly it shows well in this spring weather. Ooh, look, Miss Morland, there is the parsonage.
Oh, and there is Henry, waiting for us.
Now, I believe, Miss Morland, you will find there are few country parsonages in England half so good as this one. It may admit of improvement. Henry knows little of how to make the best of the place. Well, the beef's quite good, by the way. Little overcooked. No, it lacks the discrimination of taste that a young lady would bring to it.
What, the beef?
No, the house, the grounds, everything.
I think it perfect as it is.
Well, that must give us some encouragement.
Oh, Eleanor, the apple trees remind me of Fullerton.
I would love to visit Fullerton.
Now, we finish our meal by 3. That should just give us enough time for Miss Morland to explore the house to her heart's content.
If you would like that, Miss Morland.
Oh, I would. I would.
Just like no.
Miss Morland, if you had a free hand here, what improvements would you make?
Oh, I cannot rightly say. I like it as it is.
Yes, yes, but there are touches you would add. Small details of taste that would transform these rooms. Make them your own. This room need not detain us. It's sadly dilapidated at present.
Oh, no. It is the prettiest room in the world. If it was my house, I should never sit anywhere else. What a delightful view. And look at that dear little cottage.
Oh, you like the cottage. Henry, remember that. The cottage remains.
Yes, Father.
Come, Eleanor. We must leave Miss Morland to enjoy this room.
Yes, Father.
Keep her company, Henry.
Yes, Father.
Oh, it is truly a charming room.
And dusty, though I often use it.
You should do something with it.
Perhaps now I will.
I am glad of it. And I am glad we came here. Woodston is a very good place.
It is good enough.
Oh, it is more than that. I don't know when I have liked a parsonage half so much.
From among the great many you have known?
Well, I may not have great experience, but I have lived in a parsonage all my life, so I know something about them.
I accept your just rebuke. Woodston is my home now. If the truth were told, I prefer it to Northanger Abbey.
Oh, so do I. A few weeks ago I would have thought an abbey the grandest thing in the world. I expected it to be old and mysterious.
The abbey let you down, that is all.
I was even deluded by my own vanity into thinking your father to be a great villain. You have been so kind not to mention it.
What is your opinion of my father now?
He has shown me great kindness, and I am grateful for it.
Catherine, my father is a man of sudden enthusiasms. Few of them last any length of time.
Oh, I see.
I am sorry, that sounds ill-tempered and rude. Any person of understanding must admire and esteem you.
But I have been wrong in what I believed.
In one instance only. For the rest, your judgment is based unfailingly on your own good nature.
That afternoon they left Woodston, and the next day General Tilney found himself obliged to go to London. His departure gave Catherine the first experimental conviction that a loss can sometimes be a gain. For the next 2 days, Catherine and Eleanor passed the time in perfect happiness. Every employment voluntary, every laugh indulged, every meal a scene of ease and good humour.
Catherine, can you keep a secret?
No, I don't think I can.
Don't say that. For if you cannot, then I cannot tell you my news. And I'm dying to.
I'm very good at keeping secrets, really.
Oh, I hope so. If my father finds out, he'll be furious.
Well, what can it be?
Frank Lockwood has written to me.
No.
I had the letter this morning. He sent it under cover of my maid Alice.
How clever of him.
He writes that he misses me. What am I to do?
The General has been in better humour recently. Perhaps he will learn to like Mr. Lockwood.
I do not think he will ever change his mind about poor Frank.
Oh, who can that be?
Frederick is the only person who would arrive unannounced.
I shall go to my room. I am not yet ready to meet Captain Tilney.
I am sorry, Catherine. He has not behaved well.
Good heavens, Eleanor. What can be the matter?
It is not Frederick. It is my father, back from London.
I know, I could hear. You look so dreadfully upset.
Oh, Catherine, you must not. You must not indeed.
Is it so very bad?
I don't know how to begin. I am so wretched.
Is it a message from Woodston? Something has happened to your brother?
No. That is not it, thank heaven. But it is bad enough. You will despise me. You have every reason to.
Oh, Eleanor, I never could. You must tell me what has passed between you and your father. He is displeased at something.
My dear Catherine, we are to part.
Part? When?
My father has recollected an engagement that takes our whole family away on Monday. I'm so sorry.
I can finish my visit here at any time. Or perhaps you will come to me at Fullerton.
Oh, it is not in my power, Catherine.
Come when you can, then. You must not worry. I can go on Monday very well.
My father has fixed your leaving tomorrow morning. He has ordered a carriage to be here at 7 o'clock. No servant will be offered you.
But why?
I do not know. I could hardly believe my senses when I heard it. What will your father and mother say? When they hear of this, they must hate all our family.
Have I offended the General?
I know of no cause of offence. I have seldom seen him more angry.
Could he have discovered your letter from Mr. Lockwood?
No. There was no mention of that.
Don't be unhappy, Eleanor. An engagement must be kept. I am only sorry it was not recollected sooner that I might have written home.
A journey of that distance, forced on you with no explanation. I shall never forgive myself.
I can be ready by 7. Let me be called in time.
Yes, Catherine.
Heavily passed the night. Sleep, or repose that deserved the name of sleep, was out of the question. With a mind so occupied in the contemplation of actual and natural evil, the solitude of her situation, the darkness of her chamber, the antiquity of the building were felt and considered without the smallest of emotion.
We are to part then, Eleanor.
I half believe my father would have changed his mind before the morning. How could he remain so cruel?
I am ready to go.
Forgive me for asking, Catherine, but are you provided with money for the journey?
I had not thought of it.
You will need money for the post. Here. Please, you cannot undertake the journey without it.
Oh, it is good of you to think of it. I do not know what I would have done.
Please write to me. Let me know that you are safe at Fullerton. I will not expect more. Send it to me at Lord Longton's, and if you would, under cover to Alice.
No, Eleanor. If you are not allowed to receive my letter, I had better not write. I am sure to get home safe.
I cannot blame you, and I will not ask you again.
When you see your brother, tell him I am sorry I could not say goodbye.
Of course, dearest Catherine.
Oh, Eleanor, I will write to you, I promise.
Catherine progressed from stage to stage, asking directions from the postmasters for the names of the places she was to be conducted to. Her longest delay was at an inn to change horses.
Catherine! Good heavens! Is it you, my love?
Isabella!
This could not have been a happier coincidence if it had been in a novel. Mama and I have left Bath and are on our way home. We have been lamenting this tedious wait.
I cannot stay, Isabella.
But I have so much to say to you. First, you must tell me what you are doing in this desolate place.
I am going home.
Going home? How?
By post chaise.
I thought the Tilneys might have arranged for you to travel in more style. You certainly left with them in a grand enough manner. We have our own carriage, and I can assure you, my dear, I am amazingly glad to be free of Bath.
I have not leisure to talk now,
but I must tell you, I have been quite uneasy about your dear brother. I have not heard from him since he went back to Oxford. I fear there has been some misunderstanding. How solemn you look.
What misunderstanding can there possibly be?
There was somebody at Bath, as you know, who was amazingly disposed to follow me and tease me before you went away.
I know all about that.
Then you know that I refer to Captain Tilney. At any rate, it may be that your brother has taken something amiss.
James has been to see me and told me everything. How could you behave so to him?
Captain Tilney pursued me, though I would have nothing to do with
him. My brother truly loved you. You played with him.
Well, you are a fine one to talk.
What can you mean?
Why, dearest, you flirted outrageously with the younger Mr. Tilney all the time. Many people noticed it. I would have spoken to you about it, but it was not my place. And then there is my poor brother. You led him on to think that you might care for him. I could reproach you for that, but I don't.
You know I never cared for your brother.
You let him believe you did.
I did no such thing.
Why should we quarrel? We both know that such flirtations will occur. It is men who take them seriously. I cannot tell you how I missed you when you left Bath. You are my dearest friend.
Goodbye, Isabella.
Goodbye, Catherine. Please speak to James. Only you can make everything as it was between us.
A heroine returning to her native village in all the triumph of recovered reputation and all the dignity of a countess, with three waiting maids in a travelling chaise and four behind her, is an event on which the pen of the contriver may well delight. But my affair is wildly different. I bring back my heroine to her home in solitude and disgrace.
Mama!
Catherine, dear! Is that you?
Oh, Mama!
It is a very strange business, Catherine. General Tilney must be a very odd sort of man.
Yes, Papa.
My dear, you give yourself a great deal of needless trouble. Depend upon it, it is something not at all worth understanding. Have some more bread, Catherine.
I can allow for his wishing Catherine away when he recollected this engagement, but why not do it civilly?
It is no matter now. You are safe at home, Catherine, and our comfort does not depend upon General Tilney. Do eat, my dear. I know you're hungry.
Perhaps I should write to the general.
No, please don't do that, Papa.
I doubt if you'll get any very rational response. All I can say is, I am glad I did not know of your journey at the time.
Indeed. That would have been very alarming.
Still, there's no great harm done. It's always good for young people to have to exert themselves, and you know you were always a scatterbrained creature. Mm. Now you've been forced to have your wits about you with so much changing of chaises and so forth. It has been a strange acquaintance.
Well, we must live and learn. The next new friends you make, I hope, will be better worth keeping.
No friend can be better than Eleanor.
I dare say you'll meet again sometime or other in the course of a few years.
When did you last hear from James?
He wrote from Oxford. He's not cheerful, but he has settled back there at least.
I almost forgot. I saw Isabella when we were changing horses.
Did you, dear? That cannot have been very pleasant for you.
No, it was not. But it all seems such a long time ago, though it was only this afternoon.
You should go and rest, dear. I expect you'll be glad to be in your own bed again.
You see, forgetfulness is not merely a property of the old. Young people forget these storms as easily as if they never happened.
The next day, as a further expedient for restoring her spirits, Mrs. Morland suggested that they should call on Mrs. Allen.
It is delightful that you are back, my dear. I know we shall talk of Bath all the time. I talked to Mr. Allen about it, but he has grown tired of the subject. Now, you must tell me everything that happened while you stayed with the Tilneys. Is Northanger a delightful old place?
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Catherine took us quite by surprise yesterday evening. She travelled all the way by post.
Oh,
we knew nothing of her coming.
How extraordinary. What could have possessed you? Young people have their whims, I suppose.
General Tilney, for some odd fancy or other, all of a sudden grew tired of having her there and almost turned her out of the house.
No.
Very unfriendly, certainly, but we are so glad she's home.
Why would he do such a thing?
I really cannot say.
Could it have been some kind of fit, do you think?
It was not anything like that.
One does hear of such things, you know. I can't imagine how anyone could be unkind to you, my dear, for you are never unkind to others. Mr. Allen will be very vexed when he hears of this. Still, it is best not to brood on it. We have some delightful memories of Bath, do we not?
Oh, yes, I shall always remember Bath.
Well, you know, you were quite forlorn at first.
Oh, yes, but that did not last long.
Very true. We soon met with Mrs. Thorpe, and then we wanted for nothing. What was that book you were always reading? Eudolphin or some such name? Oh, my dear, do you remember the silk gloves? I put them on new the first time when we went to the upper rooms, you know, and they have lasted me very well since then. Do you remember that evening?
I remember it very well.
Mr. Tilney drank tea with us, yes. And I always thought him a great addition. He's so very agreeable. I have a notion that you danced with him, did you not? Is anything the matter?
Nothing, dear Mrs. Allen.
Perhaps we had better go home. Catherine has been out of sorts since her journey.
Must you? Mind you, you never did like a carriage. I remember you told me so when Mr. Thorpe was forever trying to take you on drives.
May I call on you tomorrow?
Of course you may. Mr. Allen and I are not going anywhere.
As she walked home with her mother in the gathering dusk, Catherine was heedless of the sights and sounds familiar since childhood, and she felt more wretched and abandoned than she had ever done in all of her 17 years.
There is someone to see you, Catherine. He is in the parlour.
Oh, who is it?
It is Mr. Tilney. He seems very agitated. I think you must go through and see him, Catherine.
Yes.
Miss Morland, I am glad to see you. To see that you are safe with your family.
She is safe now, but it was an extraordinary circumstance that brought her back to us.
I came here to apologise with all my heart to you and your family. You have every right to despise the name of Tilney.
I could never despise that name.
There is no excuse for my father's behaviour. When I heard what he had done, I broke with him. Utterly. I no longer have a home at Northanger Abbey.
That cannot be prudent.
Why did General Tilney behave in so rude a manner? I cannot think how Catherine could have offended him.
My father believed your daughter to be very rich. He believed, in short, that she was to inherit from Mr. Allen.
Where could he have gained such a pernicious notion?
From Isabella Thorpe's brother, John. He attached himself to my father in Bath and wished to brag about his wealthy connection.
He had no cause to believe such a thing.
He believed what he wanted to believe. Latterly, when he realised that you could never care for him, Thorpe met my father in London and now represented you as an absolute pauper. My father returned to Northanger Abbey in a fury of disappointment. The rest you know?
I don't know which of the untruths is the more wicked. Catherine is no heiress. But when the time comes, she will have a settlement of £3,000. That may not mean much to your father, Mr. Tilney. But my daughter is no pauper, sir.
Mr. Morland, believe me, I know she is above value.
Well, sir, you have made an apology, and there is an end of it. What do you say, Catherine?
I am glad you came. While I was at Northanger, I knew only kindness from you and your sister.
And let me say that friends of our children are always welcome here.
I would like, while I'm here, to pay my respects to Mrs. Allen. Perhaps Miss Morland could guide me there?
Oh, there is no need. You can see the Allen's house from here.
I would be pleased to show you.
But, Catherine, you've only just returned from there.
Perhaps it might be best if she were to show you. The path is not always clear. Do not be long, my dear.
Yes, Mama. Mrs. Allen will be pleased to see you. She was talking of you earlier.
Miss Morland, Catherine, there is something else I must say to you.
Yes?
Over the past weeks, I have come to know my own feelings. I have loved and I have not spoken. I have no right to ask you after all that has happened, but in all humility, in spite of my father, I want you to be my wife.
Yes.
You will?
I want to, with all my heart. But how can I when your father is set against us?
We are beyond his reach now.
Oh, we are not. For while he objects, my parents will never consent.
Dearest, I do not know how, but I will make things right between our families. If you are content to marry me, I will prove to you over and over again the truth of my love.
I am content.
While your father expressly forbids the union, we cannot in conscience sanction it.
I understand your scruples, sir, but I fear my father will not prove reasonable, to judge from his actions to date.
We could not knowingly place Catherine in such an unhappy situation, as would be the case were we to sow discord between a son and his father.
The discord is already there.
Don't fidget with your handkerchief so, Catherine.
Then you must reason with your father, Mr. Tilney. We only seek his consent, mind. There is nothing further that we want or expect from him. But the decent appearance of consent must be yielded.
So Henry and Catherine parted, uncertain of their future. Whether the torments of absence were softened by clandestine correspondence, let us not inquire. Mr. and Mrs. Morland never did. It was almost Christmas when Catherine received a most surprising visit from Eleanor Tilney, with news that was as welcome as it was unexpected.
Married? You are to be married?
Yes.
Not Mr. Lockwood?
Yes.
But the General was set against him. What can have changed his mind?
It is not a circumstance that reflects well on my father, but that may not surprise you.
What is it? Please, I must know.
On the death of an uncle, Frank suddenly and unexpectedly inherited a title and a fortune. Oh. Now that he is a Viscount, my father has replaced his former aversion with warm regard.
Never mind the circumstance. It is wonderful news. You shall have the happiness you deserve.
It is a happiness I intend you to share in. My engagement has thrown my father into a fit of good humour, which we have used to the advantage of you and Henry. Both I and Mr. Lockwood have set about persuading my father.
Dear Eleanor, do you imagine he will listen to you?
He already has. We would not give up until he consented to see reason. Henry is admitted back to Northanger. He is coming to you bearing a letter of consent.
Henry, coming here?
Yes, dear Catherine.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
Well, save your words for Henry. Our happiness started in Bath and then was taken away from us. Now we shall reclaim it.
The marriage duly took place in the chapel at Northanger Abbey. When the wedding was over, Henry and Catherine set out to drive to their new home at Woodston.
Well, I've come to wish you Godspeed. You are a Tilney now, Catherine, and I know you'll always remember the duties of service and honour that go with that name. And you, Henry, would do well to remember your duty to your wife, sir.
Yes, Father.
And remember, your duty to each other is to be happy. Oh, goodbye, Catherine. Goodbye, Henry.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Catherine had learned that life is very different from fiction. Charming as are all of Mrs. Radcliffe's works and those of her imitators, it is not in them that human nature, at least in the Midland counties of England, is to be looked for. Of the Alps and Pyrenees, with their pine forests and their vices, they may give a faithful delineation. And Italy, Switzerland, and the south of France might be as fruitful of horrors as are there represented. I cannot even speak for the northern and western extremities of our own country. But in the central part of England, murder is not tolerated. Servants are not slaves, and a husband and wife can live together in safety and happiness.
You're very thoughtful, dearest.
I was thinking about what Helena said.
We will be happy. Are you sure you will not mind not being mistress of Northanger Abbey?
Oh, not in the least. An abbey is all very well in its way, but a parsonage can truly be a home.
In episode 3 of Northanger Abbey, Jane Austen was played by Amanda Root, Catherine by Emily Wachter, and Henry by David Harewood. General Tilney was played by John Shrapnel, and Eleanor by Saskia Reeves. Mr. Morland was played by Gerard McDermott, Mrs. Morland by Susan Jameson, and Mrs. Allen by Julia McKenzie. Isabella was played by Claire Skinner, and James by Shiv Greywall. Northanger Abbey was written by Jane Austen and dramatised by Dominic Power. The composer was Peter Weigold, and the director was Pam Fraser-Solomon.